All right, we're talking to Mike McVeigh, who was a program director at WAKY starting in, 1979?
Yeah, I went there in February 79 and left there at the end of May 1981.
What brought you to WAKY?
A guy named George Francis was general manager then, and I had been programming a radio station in Los Angeles that was being changed to Spanish. It was a top 40 called 10Q. And I started looking around and had a strong lead on a radio station in Philadelphia. And my intention was to go to Philly. And at the last minute, consultant George Burns called me and told me about a man named George Francis. And of course, I'd heard about the history and legend of WAKY. George Burns insisted that I at least go for an interview. And I flew into Louisville thinking, there's no way I'm going to stay here. I'm just coming in for the interview as a favor to George Burns. Got there, fell in love with Louisville. The city was great. The people were great. And just the history and heritage of that radio station made me say, you know what? Louisville is it. And frankly, the 2+ years I spent there were too short. I could have spent the rest of my life there. I just loved it.
What kind of state programming-wise did you find WAKY in? The late 70s was, as we all know, a really tough time for top 40 radio stations on AM, as listeners by the millions were going over to the FM band for the better quality and the different approach. You really had your hands full, right, at WAKY?
Sure did. I mean, WAKY was holding on, but it had dropped from its glory days of 10+ shares down to about a 5 share when we got there. May have even been a 4.5 share, but it was very low in the ratings. And what we did basically was effect a change and take it into more of an adult contemporary direction. The radio station was turning 21 years old that year, and so we did an entire campaign on Happy Birthday WAKY 21 and All Grown Up. Some of the air staff had already left. Coyote Calhoun, who was doing nights when I first got there, had already given his notice and was leaving for Houston. Gary Guthrie had been the program director right before me, and Gary had left on his way to Memphis. And so there was pretty much a mass exodus initially, and we made some adjustments, moved some things around. We brought Reed Yaden back. Reed came back and joined Bill Bailey in the morning. Bob Moody had been doing news, and we moved Bob into the afternoon drive show. And I think Daryl Douglas was our first midday person, and then later Jack Petrie. Harry Lyles was doing disco when I got there, and we stuck with that for about a year, but then made the change. And a sacrifice, frankly, Harry's show was the highest rated show on the station, but as well as it did at night, it held listeners off of Bill Bailey's show in the morning. And so we changed Harry's show to more match the radio station. We hit a 9.8 and a 9.5 the last two books I was there. We actually took the number one 25-54 position in both of those last two books and beat WHAS both books. Up to that point, no one had really beaten WHAS since they'd taken the lead. You know, if you go back days before that, WAVE and WAKY both beat WHAS regularly. But once HAS got the lead, it was tough for anyone to get past it. And I believe, unless I'm mistaken, which I don't think I am, that WAKY got past WHAS for those two books. And it wasn't until WAMZ came along that HAS was beaten by another station then. The big competition when we left town was KJ100, which later became WDJX. KJ100 really gave WAKY the biggest run for its money, and I was on the way out the door. I was smart enough to know when to fold them.
So you managed to revitalize WAKY and turn it into an adult contemporary radio station. And as I recall, adult contemporary in the late 70s was a fairly new format. It was a lot different than the MOR stations that had come before. So I would assume that added some freshness to the sound.
Yeah, it sure did. It was the kind of situation that we would play in those days in adult contemporary, what it was truly intended to be, contemporary music for adults. And so you would hear Bad Company on the radio station in Boston long time, along with Billy Joel, Just the Way You Are, and songs like that. A lot of people forget that, James Taylor, who's now seen as beautiful music, was actually a very hip contemporary artist in the 70s. And so, I mean, a lot of things have changed, but in that time, we were a contemporary radio station, but one of the first to really focus on targeting women and going after that upper demo 35, 44-year-old.
All right, let's talk about some of the disc jockeys that you work with during your time at WAKY. Bill Bailey.
Bailey was amazing. I probably learned as much from Bill as I did from anyone that I ever worked with. In an interview recently, I was talking about air talent that I had really respected, and I said, you know, Charlie Tune in Los Angeles was my morning man there, Bill Bailey in Louisville, John Lanigan in Cleveland. You know, M.G. Kelly, who'd worked for me in L.A., has done mornings for me in Las Vegas and some other places. And I made a slip, and I said, you know, Bailey was probably the best morning man I ever worked for. And the interviewer said, you worked for Bill. And I laughed and said, you know, when you think about it, I really did. Because Bailey was the boss, let there be no mistake. If Bill wanted it, it was going to happen. And if you didn't want Bill to do something, you had to find a creative way to get him not to do it. Bill was prone to read your memos on the air. He would sometimes do the exact opposite of what you instructed him to do. And at the time, it was a tough go for me until I suddenly realized one day, this is his persona. Bailey is the anti-guy. He's the anti-manager. He's the contrarian. He's going to go the other direction because that's part of his act. That's part of who he is. And once I realized that and went out of my way to give him the tools that he needed to do his job, we really got along great. So I would probably say my first year working with Bill was a real challenge. My second year with him was really very good.
All right, Bob Moody.
Moody is great. Moody continues to be one of my best friends in the world. You know, Bull Moose, as I like to call him, is one of the smartest people you'll ever meet, truly an intellectual, and yet he shields it all with his soft-spoken, quiet Fayetteville, Arkansas accent. Moody is just about the brightest guy out there when it comes to figuring out how to change with the times. He was very strong as an advisor to me at Wacky. He had all the history and knew the radio station so well. And by the time I got to WAKY, Bob had been there a couple of years. He's only about a year or two older than I am, but at a very young age, he was already on the air in Denver, and then, of course, CKLW Windsor, the Big 8, also a legendary radio station. And so when Bob said something, I listened to it. He was miscast at one point, I felt, as the news director. They had him doing mornings with Bailey and news director when I got there. We moved Bob into the afternoon show and brought Reed Yaden back. Moody did a great job, I felt, as the afternoon talent, assistant program director, music director. And when I left, when I first left, I actually left twice. I left for about 4 days in San Diego and then came back. And when I did that, they made Bob the program director. When I left permanently, Jack Petrie became PD, and then Bob Moody followed him. Bob took the station into oldies and did a great job with it.
All right, Jack Petrie.
Petrie, huge voice, brilliant producer of commercials, was probably the most amazing midday talent I'd ever worked with. He had this huge monster voice, and many guys with those kind of voices tend to rely on their voice. They don't do show prep. They don't work at sounding natural. They just bellow out what's going on. Petrie was always over-prepared. He walked in that studio, knew what he was going to do. And he was so natural-sounding that you just loved it. His voice was almost too deep, though. I mean, there were times when, you know, Jack would be talking, and if you were driving in your car, the whir of your tires and Jack's deep voice would drown each other out. I mean, his voice was that deep. He was always very good at personal appearances, too. He was a good-looking guy, and he really did a great job of interfacing with people when he was out in public.
Harry Lyles.
Harry continues today to be a real innovator. I mean, he's a very successful consultant doing urban radio based out of Atlanta. McVeigh Media, our company, does utilize Harry's consulting services in a couple markets. We're working with him in Toronto, probably the biggest market where we use Harry's services. When we first worked with Harry, he was doing the night show at Wacky when I got there, doing the disco show as Dirty Harry, and he was a character. He put on a show. We had a lot of fun with it. We changed the radio station AC, and Harry continued at night. He ultimately left and went to Indianapolis. I think he felt that it would be in his best interest if he were at a top 40 FM radio station, and that's where he ended up going. But Harry's always had the ability to put on a show. His energy level is always high. He's always got a smile. He was a very positive person during the time that I worked with him, and still is as we continue to work together.
All right, let's talk about John Ashton.
John Ashton was my best man in my wedding. Now, how's that for being close and tight with an air talent? When Doris and I got married in Charleston, West Virginia, John and his wife stood up for us. John is my best man, and his wife of that time, a woman named Bonnie, was my wife's maid of honor. John worked for me in Wheeling, West Virginia, in my very first ever programming job. He was my midday talent and music director. When I got to WAKY, I felt that I needed to have somebody that I had worked with before. John did the midday show for us for a good while. Ultimately, when the company bought WVEZ and brought that into the building, we needed another production director to join Bill Purdom, who was our primary producer. And John asked if he could have that position. And so we moved John into production at that point, and that's when Jack Petrie came to do the midday show. John continues to work in Louisville today, and last I checked, I haven't talked to him in about a year, but last I checked, he was the morning man at WVEZ.
What about Bill Purdom?
Popcorn. Bill Purdom is producer of the Cox radio station in Orlando. Excellent production guy. Years after I left WAKY, I thought that Bill would be a great guy to work with again, and we hired him to be the production guy for a station we were consulting in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And he was there for about a year, and the people in Orlando stole him away from us. Billy is a very good producer. I remember one time in particular when we had Colonel Sanders, the true living Harlan Sanders, in the production room. And Bill, being a perfectionist, had the Colonel read the same commercial about four times. And after the fourth time, and the Colonel still didn't have it right, he looked at Bill Purdom and said, "Go practice on somebody else," and stomped out the studio door. And it was just one of the best. Purdom is a great producer, obviously continues to work well in Orlando and is still employed at his craft.
Tell us about Sherry Southmaid.
Good afternoon news person. She was always way too educated to be at a radio station like WAKY. And what I mean about that is, or by that is, that, you know, we were just a bunch of guys and gals having fun and goofing off and doing good radio. We pretty much all lived at the station. And she was just a really smart, really nice person. She was a young lady who could deliver news and wrote it well and almost sounded too prim and proper for WAKY. She left us and went to WRKA. And I believe ultimately her cohort, Howard Modell, went to WRKA also. Howard had been news director at one point. Reed Yaden had asked if he could just do the news and not be the director, and so Howard Modell became news director. He was a good writer. He sounded like Louisville. He had the sound of somebody who had lived there for a long time, and he was exceptionally relatable.
Now, where was Reed Yaden when you hired him back?
Reed was doing television weather for Channel 32. I believe I have that right, and also owned a small radio station in Paoli, Indiana. And so when we approached Reed, we asked him if he would be interested in a part-time job as our news director and reader. And he said if he came back, he wanted it to be full-time. As I said, ultimately, he asked us to change it into a part-time position. The other person who followed Reed as news director was Glenn Baston. Glenn came from WHAS. They had gone through some form of budget cuts or realignment, and Glenn got bounced out. And we grabbed him, and we were really fortunate to get him. Now, you've heard me talk about a lot of different news people in Reed Yaden, Glenn Baston, Sherry Southmaid, Howard. You know, the other thing was a woman named Carol Coughlin, who did part-time news for us. You know, in those days, you did news, you know, pretty much 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., and even sometimes later than that. And so radio stations in those days had full-time news people, three and four of them, and stringers out covering stories. You don't find music radio stations with staffs at large now. And when you say a five-person news team, you don't even find that sometimes on news radio stations.
What about Bobby Hatfield?
Bobby Hatfield did middays and afternoon drive. He did like noon to 3 or noon to 4, and Bob Moody followed that 4 to 7. Bobby left us and went over to Country 11, which was the old WKLO, and was instrumental in stealing Bill Bailey away from us, which, frankly, that heralded the death of WAKY when Bailey left. Bobby actually did some consulting work for McVay Media for a while. He was a program director of a news talk station in Cleveland, and when he left there, we hired him to work with us for a while prior to him buying his own station. So, I mean, when you talk about Wacky, you're really talking about a family that we've all somehow been involved with for a long time, even beyond those call letters, with Bob Moody and I working together quite a bit, and Hatfield and Harry Lyles, and it just goes on. I mean, you know, the fact that that radio station had, what, 20 years of great ratings and great talent is pretty amazing.
What about some of the cool promotions you did when you were program director at Wacky? Do you recall any of those?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll tell you, the one that really helped us score huge in the ratings, going from a 5-4 to a 9-8, was the Wacky Happiness Is Sweepstakes. And the WAKY Happiness Is Sweepstakes was the second ever full market direct mail piece by a radio station. George Burns, our consultant, told us about KFRC in San Francisco, doing a contest where they mailed listeners an invitation to listen and told them about a prize in a contest. We duplicated it. We hired the people from KFRC to come in. Les Garland, the program director, talked to me and explained to me how it worked, and we brought in their promotion director and paid her for a couple days to set it up for us. And we mailed every household in Louisville, Kentucky, a four-color trifold that invited them to listen every hour, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., and we would announce a new number each hour. If it was your number, you could win one of two new cars, a year's worth of groceries, a year's worth of gasoline, a brand new boat, a home entertainment system, and so on. And by the way, that was so long ago that the home entertainment system was a turntable with 8-track recorder.
Wow.
Stereo speakers, and also a built-in cassette.
Cool.
I have the piece framed in my office, and that's the one thing that everybody always laughs at when they hear about this home entertainment system. The promotion worked great. You read the numbers on the air, you called in, you won, and we had huge ratings. We brought it back for that second book when we went from about a 9.8 to a 9.5. It was, you know, I'm being approximate in those numbers. It was a 9-something. Fun promotions that we did would probably be the Wacky Car Star. We had a WAKY sticker. We called it the star sticker, and it took the A from WAKY and made it the top point of a star. It was a transparent window sticker that you put in the front or rear window of your car, and then a woman named Adele would ride around town in the wacky van spotting stickers and pull you over and give you a cash prize. You know, today you wouldn't try that because there'd be liability and somebody getting into an accident with the car, or somebody would pull Adele over and rob her and take all the money. You know, Adele was a pretty remarkable person in that she worked in our promotion department and drove the wacky van. She did an overnight shift, did a weekend shift, was very attractive, made a great presentation. What not a lot of people remember is that she was an alternate in the Olympic team that was at Germany, where the snipers pinned our team down and they couldn't get out of the village. She was an alternate, though, for that gymnastic team and didn't have a chance to perform because no one even showed up. I mean, it was a terrible situation. So as a result, because she could do a no-hand flip and a backward somersault without hands, we would often have her on the wacky basketball team to go out there and do a flip real quick when we were all being introduced. I'll tell you two promotions that did not go well for us. One was Wacky's World's Largest Disco, and I moved to Louisville in February of 1979. That May, with the Kentucky Derby coming up, we wanted to get involved and present an event. The Derby organization told us that all the primary events were taken. There was nothing else big that we could put our hooks into, and so we asked them if we could create our own event, and they told us it would have to be Wednesday night. We said, fine, never having any idea that people don't even start coming to town until Thursday. And so we brought in Evelyn Champagne King, Chic, Alicia Bridges, Nick Gilder, all to perform at the World's Largest Disco. And Harry Lyles was doing his nightly disco show at that time. And so he emceed the whole thing. We took over the big arena downtown, about a 20,000-seat venue. 40 people showed up that were not employed by the station.
Ooh.
We lost a lot of money on that one and decided never again to do the Wacky Derby Disco. The second promotion was one that Gary Guthrie had started prior to my getting there. And frankly, maybe even Johnny Randolph started it, the Wacky Ramblin' Raft Race. And that was a group that was going around all over the country. It had started in Atlanta on the Chattahoochee River. And the Ohio River, you've got a whole different scenario, a much stronger, much wider river where it goes through Louisville. And the fourth and final year of the race was my second year for the race. And someone drowned, and that was the end of the race. So that was very unfortunate. It was a terrible situation.
All right. Any neat stories, memorable moments besides what you've mentioned at Wacky?
You know, the things that stick in my mind about WAKY are the JC's Haunted House, the year they burned me at the stake, you know, the fair every year and being out there at the Wacky booth. The raft race, even though, as I said, it turned out to be dismal, that was quite a memory, the crowds and the people that were there. And the radio station had its own softball team and its own basketball team, the Wacky Wet Sox. WET Wet Sox was our softball team, and the Wacky Whackers was our basketball team. I bet that we were out two or three times a week. you know, again, it was a different time for all of us. My wife and I had a child that was about 3 or 4 months old when we moved there. And so everybody, you know, was either single or they were young parents, and the station activities became our social life. And I think that that was one of the things that I'll always remember is how active everybody was. Bill Bailey always had a huge Derby Day party at his house, and everybody would be at that event, and that was always a lot of fun as well.
So why did you leave?
Well, George Francis offered me about $20,000 a year more than I was making to join him in Cleveland. He had left WAKY and he went to WWWE here in Cleveland, where I live now. And my wife's family is from this general area, and so the combination of the money and the opportunity to be near my wife's family meant a lot. But also the fact, in all honesty, with Bailey gone and everyone leaving, it just wasn't WAKY anymore.
Okay, and finally, why is Wacky so important in radio history? Why, from the time that it started in 1958 through its existence in the 80s, why was the radio station important not only to people in the Kentuckiana area, but also to just radio in America as a whole?
Well, I think you have a couple things there. First off, when you look at radio as a whole, the fact that Gordon McClendon was the man who put the radio station on the air, he and Bartell and Sklar and Mike Joseph are guys who started Top 40 Radio, what it was in those days and what it later became and developed into. You know, the fact that he himself put that station on the air, it really had a major market brand on it. I think that even today, when you look at what Top 40, or as we call it today, CHR does, Gordon McClendon was one of the people who created the hot clock and rotated the music in a rapid fashion. Stunting, you know, like starting with Purple People Eater, playing it nonstop for 24 hours. You know, it still works today. We signed a radio station on not long ago, and we played Sheryl Crow, All I Want to Do, over and over again. And it got the same kind of reaction that he got back 45 years ago. So, I mean, I think that when you look at what tactics Wacky contributed, it really was the brainchild of people like McClendon. When you say, what does WAKY mean to the people in that community, all of us, wherever we grew up, have some radio station that is indelibly branded on our brain. For me, growing up in Pittsburgh, that's KQV. 1410 KQV was, you know, the same thing as WAKY, only with less history. But it's a station that when I was a junior high schooler and a teenager in high school, I couldn't get enough of. And I think that the same is clearly true with WAKY, only though because WAKY was there longer, it's affected so many more people's lives. But the number of people that I'll talk to who tell me that WAKY motivated them to get into radio, people like you, people like Don London, who programs radio stations in Norfolk, it's only initially surprising, and then you kind of get used to it because so many folks heard the great production of that radio station and decided to get into the business because of that.